Right. I'm Nikki Strong. This is VOA One, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Andrew Smith tells us how tall buildings in New York City are using carbon capture technology. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Andrew Smith.
In the ground, below a tall New York City apartment building, several machines collect carbon dioxide, or CO2, from large gas-powered boilers. The boilers help heat the building, but also release CO2 into the atmosphere. The goal of collecting the CO2 is to reduce the amount of the gas entering the atmosphere. Climate scientists say that increased levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is one reason worldwide temperatures have been increasing. Big buildings in New York City release about 2/3 of the city's emissions. New York State's buildings also release more air pollution than any other state's. Under a new state law in New York, many buildings must reduce their emissions. If they do not lower their emissions, the building owners will have to pay a fine. Some building managers are taking the CO2 and using it to make carbonated drinks, concrete, or soap. "We think the problem is reducing emissions as quickly as possible," said Brian Asparo. He is chief operating officer of CarbonQuest. The company built the machines to capture the CO2 in the apartment building. Asparo added, "Time is not on our side, and this type of solution can be installed quickly, cost-effectively, and without a major disruption." However, critics say that using more renewable sources of energy is a better solution. Carbon capture doesn't actually reduce emissions. It seeks to put them somewhere else, said Anthony Rogers Wright. He is director of environmental justice at New York Lawyers for the Public Interest. Critics also worry that it is dangerous to keep large amounts of CO2 below buildings. If too much of the gas is released by accident, it could cause health problems and even death. But supporters of storing the CO2 say it is safe. They also argue that boilers and other gas heating systems are probably more dangerous than the machines that capture the CO2. The building with CarbonQuest's machines is about 100 meters tall. The machines reduce the building's emissions by about 23%. The machines cool the CO2 to about minus 23 degrees Celsius. At that temperature, the gas becomes liquid. Trucks can then carry away the liquid CO2 to Brooklyn, another area in New York City. There, another company compresses the liquid into a solid. The solid CO2 then reacts with calcium to form calcium carbonate, which goes into concrete. Once the CO2 is in concrete, it will not release into the atmosphere unless the concrete is heated to about 600 degrees Celsius. To help increase the use of carbon capture machines, the federal government lowers taxes for owners who put them in their buildings. Nearly 70% of New York City's large buildings have steam boilers that run on natural gas or oil. That number comes from NYC Accelerator. The program helps homeowners and property managers find ways to reduce emissions. Luke Surowick is Director of Building Decarbonization at ICF, a consulting group that manages NYC Accelerator. Many buildings have heating systems that are more than 50 years old, and they often need improvements, Surowick said. He added that there are possible ways to reduce carbon emissions that have not yet been tried. I'm Andrew Smith.
A major meeting of computer hackers planned for this summer is to include an event that will test the limits of artificial intelligence AI tools. The event in August will be held as part of the yearly DEF CON hacker meeting in Las Vegas, Nevada. In addition to hackers, the gathering draws computer security experts, students, federal government officials, and others. Organizers say this year's event is expected to include thousands of hackers. The meeting provides a chance for hackers to hear from leading industry officials about the latest developments in computer security. It also includes hacking competitions. This year, several major AI developers will take part in DEF CON. Among them will be OpenAI, which launched its latest AI model, ChatGPT-4, in March. American software maker Microsoft has invested heavily in OpenAI. Google also released an AI system called Bard earlier this year. The administration of President Joe Biden has said it will support the hacking event as part of efforts to study the latest AI tools. Administration officials said the government is aiming to ensure that the fast-developing systems will continue to improve without putting people's rights and safety at risk. Recently released AI tools are built by feeding huge amounts of information into machine learning computer systems. The data trains the AI systems to develop complex skills and produce human-like results. Experts have warned that such systems may bring major changes to many different jobs and industries. They also fear the tools, known as chatbots, could greatly increase the amount of misinformation in the news media and on social media. Organizers of the DEF CON event say some of the questions attendees will try to answer include, how can chatbots be changed by hackers to cause harm? Will they share private data meant to be secret with other users? And why do the systems get easily confused when processing information about gender and race? This is why we need thousands of people, Raman Chowdhury told the Associated Press. She is an organizer of the hacking event and co-founder of AI accountability nonprofit Humane Intelligence. Chowdhury added, "We need a lot of people with a wide range of lived experiences, subject matter expertise, and backgrounds hacking at these models and trying to find problems that can then go be fixed." Chowdhury said results of the event can provide helpful information to companies looking at ways to safely use the fast-developing AI systems. She noted that the hackers' work will not end after the gathering. They will spend months afterwards creating reports on their findings and identifying specific system vulnerabilities. Alexander Wang is the chief executive of AI developer Scale AI. He told the AP, "As these foundation models become more and more widespread, it's really critical that we do everything we can to ensure their safety." Wang said he especially worries about chatbots giving out unbelievably bad medical advice or other misinformation that can cause serious harm. Jack Clark is the co-founder of AI developer Anthropic. He said he hopes the DEF CON event will lead to deeper commitments from AI developers to measure and test the safety of their systems. For this to happen, though, Clark said AI systems will need to be examined by third parties both before and after deployment. "We need to get practice at figuring out how to do this. It hasn't really been done before," he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about this week's technology report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley.
This week's report centered on a U.S. computer hacking event to be held later this summer. The event, known as DEF CON, has been held for many years. But what are the organizers saying will be different this time around?
Yes, we also talked a bit about this in the report. A big part of the conference will center on the latest AI tools released in recent months. And since this gathering will include professional hackers, they will be trying to find weak points in these tools. The idea is to identify these weaknesses, also called vulnerabilities, and to make them known to the AI developers.
I know the story said, in addition to the hackers, Some major AI developers will also be in attendance. Is this something new?
Yes, so it is, of course, common to have researchers and developers from many different areas of technology, including some in AI, attend DEF CON, especially those involved in computer security. But this year, there will be a lot more people from the AI community, including, as the story notes, OpenAI, the developer of ChatGPT, as well as software maker Microsoft.
Did representatives from those companies say what they plan to gain from the conference?
Yes, actually, it is interesting that the head of OpenAI, for example, said he welcomed the plan to have hackers try to find weaknesses in the company's AI products. He has said it will be helpful to have some of the world's best hackers testing out these AI tools so that any vulnerabilities and problems can be identified with the systems in a safe environment.
Okay, well, thanks again, Brian, for joining me and sharing more about your story.
You're welcome, Ashley. Thank you.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Story on January 20th, 1961, the day John Fitzgerald Kennedy became President of the United States. It had snowed heavily the night before. Few cars were in the streets of Washington. The outgoing president, Dwight Eisenhower, was 70 years old. John Kennedy was just 43. He was the first American president born in the 20th century. Both Eisenhower and Kennedy served in World War II. Eisenhower had been commander of Allied forces in Europe. Kennedy had been a young Navy officer in the Pacific. He came from a politically influential family in Boston, Massachusetts. But he was a fresh face in national politics. To millions of Americans, he represented a chance for a new beginning. Not everyone liked him, however. Many people thought he was too young to be president. Others did not like the idea of electing the nation's first Roman Catholic president. Eisenhower's vice president, Richard Nixon, ran against Kennedy in the election of 1960. Many people believed Nixon was a stronger opponent of communism than Kennedy. The election of 1960 was one of the closest in American history. Kennedy defeated Nixon by fewer than 120,000 votes. Now, on the steps of the Capitol building, he would be sworn in as the nation's 35th president. One of the speakers at the inauguration was the 86-year-old poet Robert Frost. The wind was blowing the paper in his hands, and the sun was shining off the snow on the ground and into his eyes. Kennedy stood to help him, but the famous poet was unable to read much of the poem he had written specially for the ceremony. Instead, he began another one that he knew from memory. Here is a studio recording of Robert Frost reading his poem, The Gift Outright.
The land was ours before we were the land's. She was our land more than 100 years before we were her people. She was ours in Massachusetts, in Virginia, but we were England's, still colonials, possessing what we still were unpossessed by what we now no more possessed. Something we were withholding made us weak until we found out that it was ourselves we were withholding from our land of living, and forthwith found salvation in surrender. Such as we were, we gave ourselves outright. The deed of gift was many deeds of war to the land vaguely realizing westward, but still unstoried, artless, unenhanced, such as she was, such as she would become.
Soon it was time for the new president to speak. He was not wearing a winter coat or a hat, unlike many of the people around him. One of the issues that Kennedy talked about was the danger of what he called the deadly atom. He was taking office during the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. Both sides had atomic bombs. People worried that there could be a World War III that would end in nuclear destruction. Kennedy said both sides should make serious proposals for the inspection and control of nuclear weapons. He said they should explore the good in science instead of the terrors.
Together, let us explore the stars, conquer the deserts, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depths, and encourage the arts and commerce. Let both sides join in creating a new endeavor, not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just, and the weak secure, and the peace preserved.
Kennedy also spoke about a torch of leadership being passed to a new generation of Americans. He urged young people to take the torch and accept responsibility for the future. He also urged other countries to work with the United States to create a better world.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
John Kennedy was in office less than 2 weeks when the Soviet Union released 2 American airmen. The Soviets had shot down their spy plane over the Bering Sea. About 60 million people watched as Kennedy announced the airmen's release. It was the first presidential news conference broadcast live on television in the United States. Kennedy welcomed the release as a step toward better relations with the Soviet Union. The next month, Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev made another move toward better relations. He sent Kennedy a message. The message said that disarmament would be a great joy for all people on Earth. A few weeks later, President Kennedy announced the creation of the Peace Corps. He had spoken about his idea during the election campaign. The Peace Corps would send thousands of Americans to developing countries to teach and provide technical assistance. Soon after the Peace Corps was created, another program was announced. The purpose of the Alliance for Progress was to provide economic aid for 10 years to nations in Latin America. Another subject that Kennedy had talked about during the election campaign was the space program. He believed the United States should continue to explore outer space. The Soviet Union had gotten there first. It launched the world's first satellite in 1957. Then, in April 1961, the Soviet Union sent the first manned spacecraft into orbit around Earth. That same month, the new American president suffered a foreign policy failure. On April 17th, more than 1,000 Cuban exiles landed on a beach in western Cuba. They had received training and equipment from the United States Central Intelligence Agency. They were supposed to lead a revolution to overthrow the communist government of Fidel Castro. The place where they landed was Bahia de Cochinos, the Bay of Pigs. The invasion failed. Most of the exiles were killed or captured. It was not Kennedy's idea to try to start a revolution in Cuba. Officials in the last administration of Dwight Eisenhower had planned it. However, most of Kennedy's advisors supported the idea, and he approved it. In public, the president said he was responsible for the failure of the Bay of Pigs invasion. In private, he said, "All my life, I've known better than to depend on the experts. How could I have been so stupid?" What happened in Cuba damaged John Kennedy's popularity. His next months in office would be a struggle to regain the support of the people.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.